CBC Tuesday Night presents Thomas of Canterbury by David Windsor. Produced by Earl Pennington. During this drama documentary, you will hear the voices of Michael Ramsay, the present and 100th Archbishop of Canterbury, Dom David Knowles, Dr. William Urry, Canon Herbert Waddams, Canon Joseph Robinson, Professor Harold Williams, Professor Christopher Brooke, and Bergen Bickersteth. The role of Becket is played by Powis Thomas. Henry by Paul Hecht. Thomas of Canterbury.
Heart, speak now and say to your God, my face hath sought thee. Thy face, O Lord, will I still seek. I thank thee, O Lord, for thine everlasting love for thine unworthy son, Thomas Becket, and pray that I have pleased thee, since thou saw fit to appoint me thine archbishop. Thou chose to exile me, O Lord of the Holy Trinity. Have I been chosen for more? Do I presume? Yet I love thee, Mary, as only a sinner can. Oh, how miserable is the lot of man when he has lost that for which he was made.
Your Grace?
Brother Peter.
It is time, Your Grace.
But alas for me, alas for this poor wretch, who was one of the wretched sons of Eve, far away from God. This sinner begs redemption, Holy Mary, Mother of God, and offers his all, his life, in feeble restitution for the betrayal of this thy temple, sullied by the temptations of the evil one. He strikes too hard and too often on the same wheel with hairy monk. Forgive me, Mary, Holy Mary, and judge me not by my thoughts, for my mind is the refuge of an arrogant scoundrel.
Becket was a man who was rather like Cicero in the ancient Roman world. He was a new man. He didn't belong to the old nobility. He wasn't a poor boy by any chance. He was a Norman. His father was in the big merchant class in London. Becket's upbringing was that of a fairly well-off boy in a prosperous business family in the city of London, though they suffered financially later on.
I've thought about Becket for the last 20 years, one way or another. I began by knowing no more about it than anybody does who's read a bit of history. But I became more and more interested in that particular point, how far Becket was responsible for what happened to him, mistakes he made, and whether the quarrel between him and the king, Henry II, was absolutely necessary, inevitable.
But there are divergent elements in his personality. He was a businessman's son, and quite early on he fell under the influence of a man, a rather obscure man called Richard de Legge, who was of the knightly class, and there's no doubt that this man instilled into Beckett a love for hunting and hawking and knightly pursuits, which clashed with his upbringing as a merchant's son in London.
Like Henry, he had clearly a gift of charm. He could be charming and winning, but he doesn't seem to have felt that a sense of love, affection, friendship, as we ordinarily understand these terms, so that although he commanded loyalty from quite a distinguished, in fact, in many ways, very distinguished group of men, he doesn't seem to have commanded strong affection.
His mother was obviously a considerable influence on him, and he had three sisters. There's no doubt that boy grew up very much dominated by feminine influence when he was at home.
He was a pure Norman. That is a thing to remember. There was not a bit of the Anglo-Saxon in him. He had all the great qualities and the faults of the Norman. But he came up from low estate and then was suddenly, unexpectedly, chosen to be Chancellor by Henry II. And for those 8 years of his chancellorship, he assisted the king in every way, became his friend, his boon companion to a certain extent, though he always kept his dignity, and Henry II thought he had everything he wanted.
And do you, O Lord my God, will you teach my heart where and how it shall find you? Thou hast seen fit to try me, O Lord, to cast from thy favour and the favour of men's eyes and banish Thomas, Archbishop of Canterbury, from his holy see. Exiled to France, and wronged at the hands of those who owe me submission as their spiritual father, God has made Thomas of Canterbury the instrument of his inexorable justice. Foliot, insidious Bishop of London, and you, Nigel of Sackville, with your cohort Richard of Hastings, enjoy the fruits of your heretical disloyalty and burn in the fires of eternal damnation which seethe outside the body of God where I have cast thee. And take care. Henry, king you are, but your dominion does not encompass your own soul. You are no more than its steward, and must render account to God through me, your spiritual father. But I loved thee, Henry. Of all men, I loved thee the most, my king and my son, my little Harry. It augured so well when we first met. My blood was quicker and the sun was warmer. The face of a king, young and eager.
Your Majesty, Thomas Beckett, clerk in the service of Theobald, Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh, yes, you will rise. By the eyes of God, a giant. What a size. Back to back, Thomas Beckett. Leicester, how much higher?
Head, sire?
Not a whole head, Leicester, not a complete head. Now, don't stoop, Beckett.
It's an entire head, Your Majesty. Perhaps a little neck as well.
How did you grow so large, Beckett?
Your
Wonderful! This giant stumbles. He stumbles over the same stone twice.
Your Majesty.
Oh, that's better.
It's an affliction I suffered in my youth, which visits me rarely now.
Uh-huh.
As I grew larger, I discovered people noticed it less. Those that continued to notice my tongue's unruliness were made aware of my unruly stature, and they were few that stumbled over that stone twice.
Yes, enough. You know why you're here, Beckett. His Grace is suing for your appointment as my Chancellor. I want no pious monk. Explain yourself.
To my shame, sire, piety has yet to be laid at my door. I would serve God, and I would serve your majesty, and wherever possible, sire, I would serve myself.
Well, the man's a fool who does not, and is not to be trusted. Or a liar to be trusted even less. What age have you, Beckett?
God has granted me 36 winters.
A baker's dozen more than he's granted me. I like that. You could season my youth.
A green broom sweeps clean.
Especially in the hands of an old sweeper. I need counsel as well as a green broom. Oh, he's big, isn't he, Lester?
The archdeacon has stature, Your Majesty. No one can deny that.
Yes, and watch out if he does. Is that it, Beckett?
On some occasions, Your Majesty.
How is it you stammer no more?
That is also an occasional hazard, sire. God granted it to me and grants also respite.
How would you counsel concerning the unlicensed castles I inherited from Stephen? You are familiar?
Yes, sire.
What should the king do?
Your Majesty, be he commoner, baron, or duke, a man will take for himself whatever God allows him to lay hands on and hold it for as long as he is able. He recognizes only the authority of the man who can take it away. The impulse to power acknowledges one restraint, that is, a conflicting impulse of greater strength. You must destroy these castles. If you can't destroy them, they will destroy you.
You hear, Lester?
I hear.
What kind of a cleric is this? A man with such thoughts is wasted in Canterbury. Do you hunt?
I am ashamed to say that I do, sire.
You are wearing the wrong cloth, clerk. God wants a man like you in an office appropriate to your girth. We will dress you correctly, and you will be proud of your hunting. You're too big for an archdeacon.
A man goes where the wind of opportunity under the aegis of God blows, Your Majesty.
You've been drafted into the wrong sea, Beckett. We will see to it that a favorable breeze carries you to a shore where your abilities and temperaments will serve us and you to more advantage. You will never make a priest, Beckett, or at best, a bad one.
Never make a priest. Then why did he force me to become one? Was it your will, God? I've subdued my flesh, abased my person under the lash. My body is foul with sores and vermin. And I've put aside all earthly preferment, made an enemy of my king and friend, and am banished from rightful office and the affairs of men. Is this your will, God, for thy son? But thou, O Lord, how long, O Lord, wilt thou forget me unto the end? How long dost thou turn away thy face from me?
Your Grace.
Thank you, my son. I will serve thee, Holy Trinity, unto death and beyond. Yet when will I be granted peace? I am beaten, have made penance, hungered, donned these vile hair garments, eaten filth, deprived myself of sleep, kissed the sores of the sick, and cast myself on the ground before thee. Yet this cursed, arrogant man surges up within me. Is there no redemption from myself? Can I never achieve grace?
Beckett Prack. To the medieval concept of holiness, which included negatively this kind of warfare against the flesh, of which all these mortifications were a sign, though I'm quite sure that Beckett himself would have said that the positive side of holiness is humility and the selfless love for God for man. I think it's humility that is the hallmark of saintliness, and always has been.
The quarrel was inevitable at that moment in England, if, as indeed happened, there came to the front a king who was set upon developing the kingly power in all respects, and a bishop or an archbishop who had absorbed and was defending a new view of the papacy, the development of canon law, gathering of all the threads of the church, first of all into the hands of the bishops, and through the bishops into the hands of the Pope.
As Chancellor, he threw himself into the business of creating the image of a new king, and what was virtually a new dynasty had to be created, and Becket did this with the greatest panache. Very expensive it must have been, but clearly very successful. And he threw himself into the life of a courtier, I think with all the more success because he obviously honestly enjoyed hunting and hawking.
I have grown old without nature's compensations to the passage of time. This unseemly pride I cannot vanquish. What can I offer to thy glory, O Lord, but an unrequited yearning for grace? I seek, strive, and pray for humility, but it comes not. It will not come. Grant me release, O Lord. Absolve me from pride, hate, and violence. Redeem me, Holy Trinity, that I may live in thy love and walk in thy glory, cleansed of the evil one who fights so fiercely for the possession of my immortal soul. Why do I fight the only man I ever loved? Have I renounced grace and friendship and love to shatter myself upon the rocks of pride and hatred and hide behind thy name, God, cloaking the issue of my pride under the mantle of my holy office? Are you within me, Holy Mary? Or has the bailiwick of Lucifer, Prince of Darkness, encroached upon this thy consecrated temple? I will drive him out. I will submit again and again to the cleansing discipline until the beast has left me. This flesh of mine remains too strong. I cannot subject it. Do what I will.
He was a man larger than life, whom people can't get away from. He could never be overlooked. He was a man who imposed his personality on people, and this personality has somehow been imposed upon history as well. Becket's physical presence was in itself a very powerful one. From the earliest times, he was a tremendous sportsman. Hawking and all this sort of thing. He was good at everything, Becket was, you know, right from the beginning, from a young man. This is one of the reasons why he got on so well with Henry. Henry, of course, like the Plantagenet family, had a furious and ungovernable temper.
I have seen no sign, no assurance from thee, Lord, that my feet move in the direction of your will. Never one sign from above that my office is more than an earthly appointment, unsanctified by grace. Can I have one sign, O Lord, one portent, one omen that I am truly thy son, one smile from heaven upon this misguided servant who reaches up to heaven, but whose feet remain in mire? And you, Henry, could you not have conceded some of your dignities to the church and to your friend? I was your father, your friend, and your subject, but God called me from my carefree days with you to a more severe habit.
Bill.
in. Tom the King is here.
So we hear, sire.
I'm a noisy brute, Thomas, I know it. But I've just killed a boar, a beast who weighed 300 weight if he was an ounce. You should have come with me. The sun was shining and you could see your breath until noon.
I wanted to, but I was instructing some new clerk.
Wine! I want wine. I'm sick with the foul stuff I drink. If the king wants fine wine, he visits his chancellor, huh? That thieving rogue Becket, before whom even the royal presence falls into a shadow. Come on, Tommy, the wine.
John, quickly, wine. You're drunk already,
drunk
Harry.
Drunk with love, Tommy. Drunk with the love of the niece of a lady-in-waiting to that cold piece of flesh, my queen. This is my second royal visit of the day.
Your health, sire.
Ah, what a man you are, Tommy. Where is everyone? Where are the gourmets who eschew the royal table for the Chancellor's viands?
Well, I had work to do. Your health, Henry.
Oh, I'm full of gas, Tommy. More, Page. Who are you, boy?
He's York's youngest son, Your Majesty.
Well, does he not have a tongue? Can you speak, York? No? Well, just as well in a younger son. You'll live longer. Thomas, when my son grows a little, he shall come to you. Get him away from those damned women dribbling over him all day.
An honor which will be appreciated, sire.
Oh, you're a dull dog today, Tom. You should have come hunting. How many clerks have you got now?
52.
Hmm.
It takes a lot of work to keep the royal coffers full.
Oh, don't chide me, Thomas.
Well, if I don't, then God...
Tommy! You're not a deacon anymore.
But I am, sire, very much so.
Yes, you are very much so. Very much a deacon.
Well, I'm glad to have amused His Majesty.
Oh, now, come on, Tom, look at your table. Gold plate. The king eats off silver when he's lucky, while his very much a deacon chancellor sups off gold. Look at that cloak. Gold embroidery, I'll lay odds. Those buttons are topaz.
Sapphire.
Very much a deacon. Tommy, how can you say that to me?
Nevertheless, Harry, I do say it.
My dear old Thomas, you're a hypocrite. A charming one, and I do love thee, but you say one thing and do another. Ergo, a hypocrite.
John, wine!
Where's that wine from?
Persia.
There! It's in the woof of the wool, in the fabric of the garment itself. Some deacon, my chancellor. Your health, Thomas Becket.
To the health, wealth, and Majesty of Harry Plantagenet, Duke of Normandy, Duke of Aquitaine, Count of Anjou, and King of England. Would you have your Chancellor dress in rags?
Point.
You can ride about covered in mud, Harry, as you are now, incidentally.
Point.
For you are the king and wear the majesty of kingship. But I, Thomas Becket, your chancellor, am an ordinary mortal and derive my dignities from my king, except those God's grace bestows, who in turn either enjoys or suffers the reflected image his servant makes in the eyes of men. What kind of king has such a servant, men ask, be that servant in rags or fine robes? When the king's person is present, and never more so than in your case, sire, the true nature of his divine prerogative shines and dazzles men's eyes, no matter what the king wears or what the king does. But in our humble circumstance, we have need of the trappings and gaudy fineries of wealth and power to do justice to our king and project his awesome majesty.
Hogwash.
Call it what you will, Harry. It's true.
I know it's true, Tommy. Give me credit for having brains. It's all true. That's why I encourage you. But it's also true that you would wear bejeweled cloaks, drink Persian wines, eat off gold, have a retinue twice the size of mine, and all the rest of your glorious extravagances, whether it were true or not. Why? Because you love it. You love pomp and splendor and extravagance for themselves, firstly, and for their function, secondly. And so you should. You're a master at all of them. But I say you're a hypocrite. Not because you exercise your bent, but because you won't admit the seed of it. Not even to yourself, Tommy. You should go with women. And there's another hypocrisy of yours. Carousing might qualify your love of silks and perfumes.
No silk is smoother than a woman's belly, although I'll concede that there are finer perfumes.
As you say, Harry, point, point.
And now, Thomas, since you are so anxious to work, I call you to order as my chancellor. On the matter of the reclamation of royal lands and dignities established by my grandfather, which Stephen let slip from his fingers into the ever-open arms of the church, and some of my barons.
I have been unable to discover the actual ordinances, Your Majesty, but documentation arguing in favor of the crown has been compiled under my instruction from the Canterbury archives. We are legal.
Good. The Bishop of Salisbury?
The bishop begs to remind that prior to the king's accession, the bishop's support was sought and freely given, and that the king promised to restore to the see of Salisbury the castle of Devizes.
Remind him that his support was freely given, then offer him compensation. The castle is the crown's. Can we do that?
The church won't like it.
Are we truly legal?
Yes, but the law is a many-headed beast, and the church is jealous.
I leave that to my chancellor. Hugh Mortimer?
Has fortified Wigmore, Clearbury, and Bridgenorth, and stands in open defiance to the royal edict.
We must visit Hugh of Clearbury. William of Aumale?
Will surrender Scarborough to your majesty's person.
Hereford?
Gilbert Folliot, Bishop of Hereford, has sent assurances that the Earl of Hereford will yield to his persuasions.
Folliot. Do you know him, Thomas?
By reputation only. He seems an able man.
Tommy! Pamper yourself for the remainder of the day. Tomorrow we travel north. Oxford, York, Lincoln, where the Archbishop Theobald will meet us. We will deal with Mortimer and his castles, fortified or not. Oh, I am anxious to return to France.
But alas for me. Alas for this poor wretch, who was one of the wretched sons of Eve, far away from God. I crave thy forgiveness, O Lord, for I was not thy minister then. If I did not please thee, it was because I sought to do as a man does when he does well in his office. My office was the king's man. And if thou judgest me wrong, I beseech thee to accept my abject penance and forgive. For I sought after good things, and behold, trouble. I set out to reach God, and stumbled into myself. Yet I could have brought the king to his knees, had Alexander, thy vicar, and my spiritual father but permitted me to exercise thy ultimate sanction. Holy Trinity. I know Harry. Who knows him better, saving thy omnipotence? And I know that his own violence would have fueled the flames of his fear had the interdict been pronounced and his immortal soul placed in jeopardy. That king has banished my innocent kin from their earthly estate, condemned my sisters to wander the byways of Europe without benefit of inheritance or hard-earned earthly advantage. I would that he felt the bite of a mandate less vicious but more awful in its eternal damnation. That would bring our king to a more becoming station in the eyes of the god he swears by so often.
He was a man of immense power and single-mindedness. People sometimes ask, well, why did he change his views, you know? Why did he go from one side to the other? He didn't really change his views at all, because Becket was a sort of whole hogger, you could say. Whatever he was doing, he did with tremendous force. He loved power, and he loved exercising power and the trappings of power. And that love of power was seen equally when he went to meet the French king with a retinue more glorious than any monarch in Europe could produce. And when he exercised the power by wearing a hair shirt underneath his clothes. It's the same psychology. The power which comes from being totally devoted to the particular role in which he was playing a part.
Becket had to convince the king that he was his servant and not the archbishop's. And he did this so successfully that when the archbishop died, the king was entirely convinced that Becket would be a very successful combination of royal chancellor and archbishop of Canterbury, play the kind of role in his kingdom that the chancellors and archbishops in Germany played in the German kingdom in this period. He was placed in Henry's household by the advice of the old Archbishop of Canterbury, Theobald. And in the way in which relations of patronage works, it was always a question as to whether Thomas was the king's man or the Archbishop's man, even one could say at times the Archbishop's spy in the royal court. And if Becket was to make his life tolerable and do the job as the king wanted it done, he had to convince the king that he was the king's man and not the archbishop's.
Grant that I may receive thy light, even from a distance, even in the depths. I warned him. Make a man a cripple, he will act like a cripple. Make a man mad, he will act mad. Make a man a chancellor, and he will act like a chancellor. As this is true, how much truer is it that make a man of God, and he will be God's man.
It's good to see you amongst us again, Thomas. His Grace and all of us sorely miss our Archdeacon.
And your Archdeacon sorely misses the peace of these cloisters. My dear John, the burdens that are attendant on this office of Chancellor.
We hear great things about you. We like to think you're still one of us, even though you are so highly placed.
Highly placed? As the battlefield for 100 factions, irreconcilable ambitions and privileges all find their way to my office, John. Is that what you call highly placed?
We only feel
that... they're all laid at my door. Bribes, threats, promises, bargains, ancient privilege, friendship. They all make their claim on your poor friend, Thomas. And can we satisfy them? Can we please them all? We can please none except the king. And what of my own conflicting loyalties? Do you envy me, John of Salisbury? Do you envy your old friend and fellow clerk, Thomas Becket?
It must be very difficult.
Difficult? It's impossible.
But with God's help...
Pray for me, John. I need God's help.
The church needs your help, Thomas.
I know. I feel it strongly. Yet I serve the king. What does His Grace say about Battle Abbey?
He is bitterly disappointed.
With the verdict... No other was possible.
In you.
Me? Well, what could I do? The abbey was clearly within the king's prerogative, as granted by William the Conqueror in the founding charter. There is clear exemption from episcopal jurisdiction.
No doubt. But Theobald was hoping you'd exert some influence on behalf of Canterbury. They say you have the king's ear.
I find the king's ear works better when you pour into it what he wants it to hear. The king's a willful man, jealous of any encroachment on kingly rights and privileges. Once the abbot of Battle had sued for confirmation of the royal grant, the conclusion was foregone.
How can you say that? The Pope himself ordered the abbot to submit to his bishop. No secular charter can confer ecclesiastical immunity upon an abbey. Yet when Bishop Hilary pleaded this...
The king said, "This is a strange thing I hear, that the charters of the kings, my predecessors, confirmed by the full authority of the Crown of England and by the testimony of our great men, should be pronounced arbitrary by you, my Lord Bishop."
And my Lord Chancellor said, "Bishop of Chichester, you are disloyal to my Lord the King, to whom you have taken the oath of allegiance, as all men know." Why did you make such a statement? Do the interests of the church mean nothing to you?
Hilary is a fool. He should have seen me first.
But
This is an annulment of the church's jurisdiction in an ecclesiastical affair. How far will the king go? And how far will you aid and abet him? We thought you were with us.
And so I am, John, but am I the archbishop? Am I the pope, or am I chancellor?
His grace was relying on your good offices. We were sure you were with us. We were mistaken.
You most certainly were. Why should I do dirty work for the church?
Why should you do dirty work for the king?
Because I am his chancellor, entrusted with his seal. The pope has the ultimate weapon. Why does he not use it? I tell you, John, this issue is not over. Henry is committed to a policy of reinstating the royal powers, prerogatives, and privileges as they were during his grandfather's rule. He plans to restore the crown of England to its full glory. The toes of the church will be trod on. If you knew him as I do, had witnessed his intelligence, strategies, determination, you would think twice, thrice, and then again before you opposed him. Henry is a strong and brilliant king, John, my friend, and I would not wish to be the man compelled by holy office to remind him that he too is answerable and in truth derives his authority from another infinitely greater king. Oh, come, let us talk of old times. And yet it was I, God, that thou chose to champion thine earthly jurisdiction. I, who had worn the armor of knighthood and fought in bloody battlefields. Did you need a soldier, O Lord, to defend the body of Christ? O Lord, I knew thy protagonist. Had I not seen him cut off the ears and nose of hostage children in diabolical rage? I knew him. Still, this king who toyed with thy glory and presumed that his chancellor would retain allegiance to himself when he made that same man the chancellor of God. I serve that king, and I pray that my service does not disappoint him. Save me, Lord, take my burden from me, and let not the pit shut her mouth upon me.